R-E-A-L.
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for the Ask a Vegan Show. It is Sunday, July 15th, and I'm broadcasting from San Jose, California. I'm here for a few weeks, and I love visiting other places. I see so much. I learn so much. And one of the exciting things is that there's always things to discover with vegan food. So I'm happy to be here. And of course, my feeling about Northern California, I lived here for about 9 years back in, the late 80s and early 90s. And when I first moved out here, I called it the Promised Land. It's so beautiful. The sky is almost always blue. The weather is near perfect all the time. It does rain here. Certainly, you can go into San Francisco and get a really nice chill. You know, Mark Twain said the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. And it can be rather shocking when you come from San Jose and it's all hot and sunny and warm. And then you go into San Francisco and, you get that cold thing going on. You just need to be prepared. But it's pretty beautiful here. And I'm enjoying that very, very much. What are we going to talk about today? So many different things going on. The first thing I wanted to talk about is I got a question from a listener who recently went vegan. And first, I want to say congratulations. Thank you for doing what you're doing for yourself, for your family, for the animals, and for the planet. And don't knock yourself, you know, if occasionally you don't do exactly what you want to do, it's okay, you're on the right path. And certainly I'm here, there are many other people, and blog sites and websites available to keep you going and keep you strong. Certainly contact me here at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org for any questions that you may have. Okay? But your question was a really good one, and it was about your 9-year-old daughter who is not a vegan and is not that interested in being one. And so what do you do? It's interesting because sometimes it's the kids that want to be vegetarian or vegan and the parents don't know what to do or what to feed them. And then sometimes it's the reverse. Now, certainly when your children are really early, like born or infants or toddlers, it's a lot more easy to control their food choices. It may be easier to control their food choices, but it's a struggle no matter what you choose to eat to feed children today. There are so many books out on the subject about one country doing it better than another, but we live in a society today that really supports the independence of children and having them make their own decisions. And in some ways, that's a good thing. I personally think when it comes to food, parents should really be the guiding factor, unless the parents really don't know what they're doing about food and the children know better. But I think children really need boundaries, especially in the early days when it comes to making choices. And so you can give them the opportunity to make choices, but the choices should all be healthy ones. Okay, so what to do and what to feed children? There are lots of websites out there on the subject, but here's what I recommend. And I recommend it not just for children, but for adults too. So the thing is, there are many dishes that can be made that you don't even realize whether they're vegan or not vegan. So let's start with breakfast, because breakfast is a very important meal and it's an easy way to get good food in and start the day with healthy choices. And we have lots of recipes on our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. So you can make pancakes and waffles. And many of our recipes are vegan. They're all vegan, but many of them are gluten-free. These are fun. You can make them from scratch in the morning, or if you are challenged with time because everybody's rushing around and going to school and going to work or whatever, you can make a pile of them in advance on the weekends or whenever your day offs are and freeze them and then use them as you do. And then there are also vegan varieties in the frozen case in most supermarkets. So pancakes and waffles and cereals, fruit and oatmeal. We've got some great oatmeal recipes, cold and hot. And the thing is to load these foods up with raw nuts and seeds and lots of fresh fruit, maybe some dried fruit. This is a great way to get some of these really nutritious foods that taste great in your body, ready to go. And kids love these foods. And you don't have to say, we're having vegan waffles this morning, we're having vegan pancakes. We're just having pancakes with strawberry sauce or with raspberry blueberry sauce. It's fun, it's easy, it's delicious. You don't have to focus on what's in it or what's not in it. Of course, I think it's good at some point to share with children what's in their food, because most people today don't know what's in their food. And that's partly how we got to where we are today, with corporations, companies putting junk into our foods because we don't care about what's in our food. Another great thing about making pancakes or waffles is you can put things like flax seeds into them and nobody knows they're there. They just taste delicious. So that's breakfast. Of course, one more thing about breakfast. I am not a supporter of box cereals. I know that they're easy. Personally, I don't get it. A lot of them are loaded with sugar. They have, sometimes they're enhanced, quote, enhanced with vitamins that are added because the whole grains have been processed into refined grains and you have to add vitamins back in. What I like to do is use whole grains, oatmeal, quinoa, millet, rice, brown rice, buckwheat. Buckwheat isn't a whole grain, but we consider it in the whole grain category. I like to make these, and sometimes you can make a whole pile, cook up a pile of them in advance, or you don't even have to cook oatmeal or quinoa. You can just soak them overnight in a non-dairy milk or a fruit juice, for example, and then they're ready to go in the morning, soft and easy to chew. This is what I like to use for cereals, either mix them up or eat them individually with raw nuts and seeds and fruits. They're whole, they're not processed, they're really good for you and very, very satisfying, and a great way to start the day with breakfast without even mentioning the V word. So that's easy for kids. And then lunch, of course, there's lots of different options. It depends, of course, if your child likes to eat from the school cafeteria, then you really can't control it. But there are many different things you can serve for lunch without, again, saying that it's vegan. You can make burritos and quesadillas that use vegan cheese, either that you buy from the store or some of the nut cheeses that you might make. We have some of my favorite versions of cheese are things we make ourselves at home, and we have several recipes on the responsibleeatingandliving.com website. Cashew cheese and almond cheese. These are really delicious, good for you. They melt. They're amazing. And peanut butter and jelly, of course, on your favorite bread. And you can make vegan pizza. You can make spaghetti and meatballs. And there are a number of different companies now that make vegan versions of meatballs. Some call them meatballs or wheatballs. And the key ingredient, I think, is textured vegetable protein, which is a soy process. It is a soy product. It is somewhat processed, but I think it's better than eating chopped meat. And for people that are transitioning to a vegan diet, this is a great food. You can buy different kinds of textured vegetable protein in the cold case in many supermarkets and health food stores. Some of them look like ground beef, lean. There's different brands, Gimme Lean and some others that are salted and seasoned. Or you can buy it dry and just hydrate it with water or tomato sauce or vegetable broth, and then use it like chopped meat and make your own burgers, make your own meatballs, make tomato meat sauce, and you can fool most people this way. And I think for children, this is a great way to move into a vegetarian diet without even saying what it is. We're having spaghetti and tomato sauce today, or spaghetti and my favorite meat sauce. You can make meatloaf with this textured vegetable protein, or make a vegetable loaf that's made with whole grains and beans and nuts, and you can serve that with mashed potatoes. You can make a brown gravy that doesn't have any animal products in it, just with flour and maybe a little tamari or soy sauce and some herbs and seasonings. It's really pretty easy to make kid-friendly food without even mentioning whether it has meat in it. Now, there are some wonderful products out on the market today. Gardein, G-A-R-D-E-I-N. It's a combination of pea flour, wheat, gluten, and soy. So for some people that are soy sensitive or gluten, this may not be the ideal thing. But I think for most people, especially for kids, this is a great product to have. You can buy it plain or buy it seasoned and make stir fries with it. You can make chicken nuggets. And there are already made vegan versions of chicken nuggets. There are all kinds of kid-friendly foods out there which you can feed your kids. And at the same time, of course, have the salad, have the vegetable sides, broccoli, spinach, peas and green beans, because the salad and the vegetables, these are really the important foods that we need to eat. Everyone, whether you decide to be vegetarian or vegan or not, we all need to be eating more plants. You can make nachos with vegan cheeses, either the ones on our website or there's some in the supermarket. You can add beans to them and avocado. Another really popular thing for kids is kale chips, and you can buy them or you can make them. I would Google kale chip recipes. There are so many out there. You can use the oven to make them. Some people use dehydrators, but you don't want to go into the expense of having a dehydrator. You can certainly do it at a low temperature in the oven. And, you know, just leaving out bowls of fresh fruit is so appealing to children. Fruit that is ripe, sweet, cleaned, and ready to go in a bowl just for them to grab whenever they want. A friend of mine was just telling me, who is not vegetarian and her kids have grown up on junk food, she just decided to put fresh fruit out and the kids are grabbing it because it's naturally delicious and people love it. So many things, and you don't even have to ever say, yeah, this is vegan. No, this is just good, delicious, healthy food. Lasagna is another one, and you can use regular lasagna noodles. You can use whole wheat noodles. There are so many different noodle varieties out there today. And you can, again, use a tomato sauce, or if you want, you can use the textured vegetable protein before and make a vegetarian meat sauce. You can make a ricotta-type cheese by just smashing tofu, adding a little oregano, and a little tomato sauce to it. You don't know that it's not cheese. It just tastes good. So I think there are some ideas there for you, and I hope this helps. I wanted to mention, too, that when the time is right, there could be an opportunity to share with the child your reasons for being vegetarian, your reasons for wanting to be vegan. And this can be complicated. This can be difficult because You really don't want to share the ugliness that's going on in the world with children, but unfortunately there are lots of things that are going on in the world. And personally, I think the best way to handle issues with children is with honesty. And Ruby Roth is an author. She's written two books. One is called That's Why We Don't Eat Animals. She has a website, wedonteatanimals.com. It's geared for young children. She has illustrated her two books herself. The other book is Vegan is Love, and it describes in a very simple, I think easy to process manner, what's going on today without getting overly specific in the violent details. But kids get it. And so whether your child decides to want to be vegetarian or vegan with you, they can at least understand why you're doing what you're doing. And you just go from there. I hope that helps, and please, info@realmeals.org if you have any more questions. Let's move on. Okay, so I'm in San Jose, California, as I mentioned before, and there's a local newspaper that comes to the neighborhood. It's a community newspaper that's put out by the Mercury News. Mercury News is a big popular paper here in San Jose, the San Jose Mercury News. The article is Backyard Flocks Are the Trendy New Things. And it's all about more people that are deciding to have chicken coops in their yard and raise chickens. And there's lots of different reasons why they want to raise chickens. And I just want to talk about some of those things right now. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'm always looking for the good side to different subjects. So here are some of the good things behind people raising their own chickens. First of all, what's going on today in the egg industry is criminal, and factory farming of animals should end. And the raising of chickens in cramped, confined, filthy conditions for eggs should end. And there have been bills entered into Congress and different states to improve the welfare of these animals by enlarging their cages. I don't go for that. Animals should not be caged. Animals should not be confined. Animals should not be exploited. And people are really getting confused because they hear about the animal exploitation. They don't like it, but they want to have their cake and eat it too. Let's say they want to have their meat and their eggs and their dairy and eat it too. So they want to support improvement in animal welfare. And when they hear that the cages are being enlarged or that the eggs are produced free range, sometimes you see free range written on your carton, egg carton, or just organic, and people think, or they want to think, that these animals have been treated better, and they're not, because there really is no legislation that supports humane treatment, really humane treatment of animals. And what happens to most chickens, probably 99% of them that are raised for eggs, is as soon as they're born, if they're male, they're killed, they're smothered, they're just thrown away in a dump, whatever. And the little girl hens, their beaks are snipped off right away, no anesthesia. And they're crammed in a space next to all the other poor little hens. They're fed foods that are really marginal, and they're sick. They don't get to spread their wings. It's a very, very horrific situation. So some people realize this, and they want better quality eggs because the eggs coming from these factory farms are not as good tasting, they're not as healthy, they don't have the nutrition that well-treated chickens produce. But some people want the chickens in their backyard because it helps with their vegetable garden. They get to compost the chicken manure, which is good for their soil. And the chickens eat a lot of the pests, the bugs that will affect the animals, that will affect the garden. And this is a natural and environmentally friendly way to manage different pests that might affect your garden so that you don't have to add toxic chemicals to your garden. But the thing is that, and this is what I love about the stories that I read, is that many people discover that they love their chickens. They discover the personalities, the humor, the caring, the love that these animals bring. This article says, chickens lay eggs, fertilize gardens, eat harmful bugs, and are great pets. I don't like to use the word pets. The politically correct word for those of us in support of eliminating animal exploitation like to use the expression companion animals, where humans decide to live with animals as companions. People are discovering when they're raising these chickens that there's more to them, that they're intelligent, that these animals are intelligent, that they, when the humans come home from work, they really enjoy spending time with these chickens. What I'm hoping comes out of this experience for most people is that they don't want to eat chicken meat once they get to know their chickens a little better. Of course, there are some concerns where people might want to take advantage of the birds. Here in San Jose, they have some specific rules where you cannot keep roosters and you cannot keep too many birds. There are a number of regulations as to the quantities. And I think regulation that protects the birds and protects the environment is important. I love the idea of people producing some of their own food. I think this is so important that we all start growing our own food and to live with alongside animals for the benefits that we get from them without mistreating them or exploiting them is a good thing. Unfortunately, some people want to slaughter their chickens, and there's regulation against this. There's really nothing that anyone can do if you own chickens and you slaughter them and eat them yourselves, but if you want to sell them, then things get tricky. And I don't want to see things going that way, but I know they are in some areas. And we'll just have to see. Yesterday was July 14th, and a very special day, July 14th, in a lot of places. It was the 150th anniversary of the artist Gustav Klimt, and there's a major celebration going on in Vienna, where many of his works are on display for a while. I've mentioned Gustav Klimt before because I feel a special connection with the artist. And if you're curious about that, you might go to my personal website, karynhartglass.com, karynhartglass.com. Click on my story. It's a bit of my cancer story, and I talk about the relationship I had, kind of a metaphysical, spiritual story with Gustav Klimt and one of his paintings. So, in honor of the Klimt 150th anniversary, please read my story at karynhartglass.com. Yesterday, and today actually, here in San Jose, is the Obon Festival. So there's a big Japanese presence here in San Jose, California. And they have a festival, the Obon Festival, every year. It's really fun. We went there. And lots of music. All the shop owners were out selling their wares, tents selling all kinds of wonderful treats and foods. I wanted to mention one in particular, the manju. The manju, it's a popular Japanese confection. Maybe you've seen them in Japanese restaurants or Japanese coffee shops, but it's made from flour, rice powder. It may have buckwheat in it, but the filling, it's a sweet red bean paste made from boiled azuki beans and sugar. Very simple, very lovely, and vegan. So, you know, there are some things out there that people don't even realize are just naturally vegan, and we have to promote those things. You don't have to make a big deal about them. You can just enjoy them. That's the manju. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who was in Japan. I haven't been there since, I think I was last there about 12 years ago. And one of the things that I always enjoyed about Japan was that they really do eat a lot of different vegetables. Unfortunately, over the decades, this has really changed, and apparently they are eating so much more meat these days. Isn't it unfortunate that as societies become more affluent, we choose to do things that aren't good for us? Why is it that meat and unhealthy foods are associated with being wealthy? It's really a bizarre sort of reflection that when we have the means, when we have the ability to buy whatever we want, we make the wrong choices. It's really something about human nature that I don't understand. One of the fun things yesterday while going to the Obon Festival is we went to a historic landmark, which is Roy's Station. It's a coffee shop. And it was renovated from a gas station that was in Japantown for a very long time. It's a fun little coffee shop. What I like about it is they have soy milk for any of your hot beverage or iced beverage choices. And they also served a number of treats, and some of them are from the Inspired Cookie Company. TheInspiredCookie.com is the website, and I was able to enjoy a delicious peppermint chocolate chip cookie and a vegan brownie. And not only were they vegan, but they're gluten-free. TheInspiredCookie.com, you might want to check that out. I love celebrating healthy treats or vegan treats that are available in places where you don't have to make a big deal about it. You can just go in like a regular person and order a hot tea with soy milk and a treat. And life is good. Yesterday was also a very big deal day in France. It was Bastille Day or La Fête Nationale. And I have a number of friends who are in Paris and in other parts of France this week. So I've been kind of in a French state of mind as I've been recommending places to go and things to do because I did live in France for a number of years. There is one vegan restaurant that a friend of mine has been going to several times this week called the Tugalik. And the website is Tugalik.com, TUGALIK.com. I love to hear about these restaurants because when I lived in France in the early 90s, it was really hard to find vegetarian restaurants. I always ate as a vegan, but the few vegetarian restaurants that were available really weren't very good. They were that macro brown rice, simple, not very inspired clean food kind of places, and clean food is good. But when you're going to places like Paris, you want to experience some really sophisticated cuisine. And I really thought it was unfortunate that the vegetarian restaurants weren't up to par. That's changing. And if you look at the menu at the Tugalik restaurant, Of course, it's all in French, so it would help to understand. But one of the things that they offer is the clafoutis. Clafoutis, which is a baked dessert of black cherries. It's arranged in a butter dish and covered with a flan-like batter, served lukewarm. And Tougalik makes a vegan version of this very luscious dessert. So, I can't wait! Get me to Paris! Not quite yet, but hopefully soon. J'adore. J'adore Paris. What else is going on? So many things. So many things with food. Last week, I talked a little bit about a study talking about orsalic acid in apple peels and how it was good for you, and helped people lose weight. Apple a day keeps the doctor away. We eat a lot of apples. Always organic. I'm afraid almost to touch an apple that isn't organic because of the information about how pesticide concentrated in the apple peel. So if you're going to eat an apple that isn't organic, peeling is a good idea. But then you don't get this wonderful orsalic acid, which really helps digest food and minimize the production of fat, extra fat, the kind that we don't like on our bodies. Well, there's more information about apples in the news, unfortunately. There's a company called Okangan. How do I pronounce that? Or Okangan. Do you know how to say it? It's Okanagan. I'm missing a syllable there. Okanagan. It's a Canadian company in British Columbia. It's a dynamic agriculture biotechnical company based in Summerlin, British Columbia, and they specialize in developing tree fruit varieties with novel attributes that benefit fruit producers and consumers alike. Okay, that's a mouthful, and there's some stuff in there that really needs a little interpreting. They've come up with a genetically modified apple that doesn't brown. So when you slice an apple, as you're probably well aware, the skin inside that's been cut immediately starts to oxidize and turn brown. People don't like imperfect looking food, and so they've come up with a genetically modified way to keep the apple from turning brown. And I'm screaming, do we really need to genetically modify our apples to keep them from turning brown? Whatever happened to lemon juice, where you squeeze the lemon juice on the skin and that keeps them from turning brown? Or whatever happened to just dealing with it? Or not slicing them and wanting them to last forever sliced? An apple stays really fresh until you slice it. And so don't slice it. Just keep it and then eat it. But more companies today, caterers and stores, want to slice and prep things and package them so that you can buy them and you don't have to do anything about it. And people don't like to see food that looks like it's going bad or browning. So we genetically modify them and the browning goes away and the food can be old. I've got a real problem with this. I've got a problem with people not liking seeds in their watermelon, not liking pulp in their oranges. These things are important and we need them for the future of our food. Why do we have to be so picky? Who came up with these ideas? Just buy organic apples, keep them in your bag, keep them in your office, and when you're hungry, eat them. It's that simple. We don't need genetically modified apples that don't brown because we don't know what the impact of that modification is going to be. So what they're doing is they've turned off the polyphenol oxidase, which is what causes the browning. And, you know, do we know what else this chemical does in the apple? I don't know. I haven't looked into it. But maybe it does some good things in addition to turning the apple brown. Maybe it works with some other items in the apple and does things that are good for us. Or maybe turning it off is really going to do other things when we consume the apple. We don't know these things. It just makes me a little nutty, that's all. Fortunately, it hasn't been approved yet. And I don't think it's been approved. I need to look into that. They are also working on genetically modifying apples in order to manage the pests and the viruses that affect growing apples in large quantities in big groves, because that's what we do. We monocrop. And when we monocrop food, then the impact, the negative impact of viruses and pests become more problematic. Bigger is not better. We need to be growing food in a mixed environment, different plants, different trees, in much smaller scales where there's more interaction, where the farmer can actually look at each tree and see the pests, pick them off manually if necessary. Our food should be managed in smaller scales, more labor intensive, and adjust our subsidies that support food to support the healthier food, support the farmers that are going to do this type of organic farming. But right now, we don't do that. We support foods that are unhealthy, and our tax dollars keep fast food cheap. And keep in mind, fast food, the stuff we get in those popular restaurants, Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's, those foods really aren't fast. We think they're fast because we go in and we buy stuff and we just swallow it and then we're out of there. But think about everything that went into the burger or the fry in that fast food restaurant. There's nothing fast about it. There's nothing easy about it. There's nothing cheap about it. It takes a long time. To start with, you need to grow the cow. How do you grow the cow? You artificially inseminate a cow to start with, and then you grow the babies for meat. You have to feed them, which means you have to grow plants to feed those animals. They grow. You have to inject them with all kinds of vaccines and a whole variety of things that are being made in universities and pharmaceutical companies with all kinds of scientists and engineers to make those things. And then they go into the animals, and then the animals have to be pushed into trucks in order to be taken to another facility in order to be slaughtered. And the people that are doing most of the manual work to get this done are paid next to nothing. Many times they're illegal aliens, almost treated like slaves. It's horrific work. And then the animals are cut into smaller pieces, brought to a processing plant, packaged, and then they may finally make it to the fast food restaurant, coupled with the buns that have been made. That's a whole nother story, how they get to the restaurant. The French fries, there's all kinds of history behind them. There's nothing fast about this food. The people that have put all this food together, most of them are poorly paid, poorly treated. There's only a handful of people that are pocketing a lot of money from this situation. All of this is devastating the environment. There's nothing easy or fast about it, and it's not cheap. We're paying for all of this food that's killing us, causing heart disease and diabetes. We're paying for it with our tax dollar. That's fast food. That was a little break to talk about fast food. So much for apples, right? Okay, another happy thing to talk about is I like to talk about the Mark Bittman articles or Mark Bittman blogs from time to time. He's a food writer for the New York Times. And there's an article that was published on July 11th. Not by Mark Bittman. It was in his blog. But it was by Robert Goodland. Robert Goodland is retired. He's a writer. He's written for the World Watch Institute magazine. I've interviewed him on my It's All About Food show, and I recommend checking that particular podcast. He is a very intelligent and compassionate, concerned man, and is an expert in what's causing climate change today. So his article in the Mark Bittman blog is called "The FAO Yields to Meat Industry Pressure on Climate Change." I found this to be a very frustrating and sad article. So let's back up a little bit and talk about a little history. So the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, they are part of the United Nations. Back in 2006, they put out an article, you may have heard about it, "Livestock's Long Shadow." All the vegans were jumping up and down when this came out because it was reported that human-induced greenhouse gases, 18% of them, are caused by animal agriculture. So we finally had a number by a reputable mainstream organization that was telling us that animal agriculture is bad for the planet. Of course, this started lots of conversation, people talking about how it wasn't true, different numbers weren't correct, and Jeff Anhang and Robert Goodland in the World Watch magazine put out an article saying that some of the calculations in the Food and Agriculture Organization report were not exactly correct. They did some new calculations and came up with a number much larger, 51%, saying that at least 51% of human-caused greenhouse gases is attributable to livestock. Okay, so this fueled lots of commentary, lots of anger, and there was a scientist over at the University of California at Davis, and he put out some articles and reports refuting these numbers and actually saying that livestock animal agriculture is good for the environment and we just need to do it better and do it more efficiently. I don't agree with anything he has to say, and if you just apply some common sense, you will realize that it is not efficient, it is not good for the planet, it is not good for human consumption to grow plants, to feed animals, to feed people. And bottom line, it's horrifically cruel. But this particular man, Frank Mitlohner, believes in promoting intensified livestock production. Okay, so here's the really sad part about what I read in this article by Robert Goodland. The Food and Agriculture Organization just recently hired this guy, Frank Mitlohner, to be the chair of their new partnership with, are you ready for this? Oh, I'm not ready for this. Okay, so they're creating a new partnership that includes 4 wealthy countries, no poor countries. It's to promote common welfare in a neutral forum, and yet there are no poor countries. And they're promoting livestock, industrial produced meat for the poor, saying that it's a good thing. And they put this guy kind of in charge of this new partnership with meat industries and dairy industries. And you've got to wonder, what's going on? Does anybody care? Everybody who's in control of feeding the public, feeding the world, getting grants for research, for universities, it's all controlled by the meat and dairy industries, and they just want to keep doing it so that the few people that are benefiting from it can benefit, and people can continue to eat what they like to eat. It's crazy, and I find it to be very, very, very sad. What can we do? What can we do? We can support on our own, because change is only made by individuals. Change is only made by individuals demanding better things for humanity, for the planet, for our families, for our children. And that's by not buying into this. We need to buy organic, locally grown plant foods. Also, writing to our politicians, working with our schools. These are things that need to be done on an individual level. We can't just give up. Okay, that's my message there. Also, I'm going to be putting all the links of the information I've been talking about today. They will be on the Responsible Eating and Living website. If you simply click on Real Radio and click on Ask a Vegan Archive, all of this information will be up shortly. A few more things that I just wanted to mention. You know, it is summertime. I love being outdoors. There's nothing better than doing things out in the fresh air. We all need to be out in the sun, not all day, not at its peak, but we do need to get sunshine in order to make vitamin D. Vitamin D is linked to health and wellness. So many of the diseases that people are being plagued with today are linked to low vitamin D. We need to be out in the sun, breathing the fresh air, moving our bodies. But there are things to keep in mind. I've been hearing so much about Lyme disease these days. I've been hearing about more and more people being diagnosed with Lyme disease. And Lyme disease, of course, is from deer ticks. And the scary thing about it is many people don't even know that they've been bitten by a tick, because it's small, it's painless, and it's really hard to know. And apparently Lyme disease has been recorded in every state in the United States. In fact, every country, I believe, except Antarctica. And it appears to be growing. Now, that could be that we're becoming more aware of it. I'm not sure if it's increasing, but it seems to be. Okay, so what do we do about it? Well, there are some recommendations, and I'm going to read some of them for you here. Wear light-colored protective clothing, long-sleeve shirts, long trousers, boots or sturdy shoes, and a head covering. Tuck trouser cuffs in socks and tape the area where pants and socks meet so ticks cannot crawl under clothing. Now, that sounds pretty intense. I think that's when you're definitely in areas that have high grasses, where you know ticks may be. They talk about applying insect repellent containing 10% to 30% DEET, primarily to clothes. Apply sparingly to exposed skin. Do not spray directly into the face. Avoid sensitive areas. And walk in the center of trails so weeds do not brush against you. Check yourself, children, and other family members every 2 to 3 hours for ticks. Most ticks seldom attack quickly and rarely transmit a tick-borne disease until they have been attached for 4 or more hours. If your pets spend time outdoors, regularly check them for ticks, too. This one's important. Remove any tick promptly. Do not burn the tick with a match or cover it with petroleum jelly. That's interesting because I've recently seen some emails saying that that's what you want to do. Do not use bare hands. The best way to remove a tick is to grasp it with tweezers as close to the skin as possible and gently but firmly pull it straight out. Do not twist or jerk the tick. If tweezers are not available, grasp the tick with a piece of tissue or cloth or whatever can be used as a barrier between your fingers and the tick. If the mouth parts do not break off, do not become alarmed. Once the mouth parts are removed from the rest of the tick can no longer transmit the Lyme disease bacteria. If you want to have an intact tick identified, put it in a small vial of rubbing alcohol and contact your local health department for assistance. Of course, wash the bite area and your hands thoroughly with soap and water. Apply an antiseptic to the bite site. Make sure the property around your home is unattractive to ticks. Keep your grass mowed and keep your weeds cut. Different symptoms for Lyme disease. And some of them are flu-like. Illness, fever, chills, sweats, muscle aches, fatigue, nausea, and joint pain. Rash, 10% have a rash, and Bell's palsy can be a symptom. Later, after you've been bitten, later symptoms include headache, stiff neck, lighter sound sensitivity, cognitive impairment, sleep disturbance, depression, anxiety or mood swings, arthritis, fatigue, abdominal pain, nausea, diarrhea, chest pain, palpitations, shortness of breath, tingling, burning, or shooting pains. What's really tough about this is it's very difficult to diagnose. Many doctors don't diagnose it, or sometimes some of the tests give false positives. Some of the tests are not interpreted correctly. Sometimes you're told you have Lyme disease and you don't. It's really very, very confusing. I would get several different opinions from different doctors and different lab tests. But the key is to get it early, take the antibiotics, and really eat a very healthy, nutritious diet to keep your immune system strong. I've also been told by a number of people that have been afflicted with Lyme disease that supplementing with reishi mushrooms really, really helps. I've talked before about mushrooms. I did a show on It's All About Food. You can check my archives about mushrooms. They have powerful immune system boosting properties. I call them natural chemotherapy. They're really great for fighting cancer. But apparently they also... Okay, what else do we have in the news here before we come to an end of the program? You may have heard about Venus Williams, diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, Sjogren's syndrome, which makes her feel fatigued and makes her joints ache. This was really sad news. She's an incredible athlete. But she decided to go on a raw vegan diet, and she is sticking with it. It's really helping her. And again, the power of plant foods. I cannot underline enough how important they are. Certainly, none of us leave this world alive. Life has a beginning and an end. None of us are immortal. But the power of plants really keep our immune system strong and make it easier to go through life's challenges, reduce the risks of most illnesses and diseases, and help us get through the ones that we do get contracted with. Power plants, green foods. That's why I talk about this subject every week. I'm only here for those who are interested. I'm not here for those who aren't interested. I only share what I know with people who want to hear it. So I thank you for listening. If you have any comments and questions,
Responsible eating and living.
REAL.
Real's good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do.
When it comes to good health,
we need facts that are true. To choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.
You'll find the real tools for